you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout, throw my hands up and shout, throw my head back and shout, come on now, don't forget to say you will, don't forget to say yeah, 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 yeah,
say you will,
say it right now, baby,
say you will,
come on, come on,
say you will,
say it better,
say you will,
come on now, say that you love me,
say
that you need me,
say
that you want me,
say you want
live
me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles.
I still remember when
you
used to be now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles, on location, but broadcasting live through our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. Today, the latest on health and healing, including a new study from the University of Illinois on how we can use phenols, I'll explain that, to turn off inflammation that can help you if you have diabetes. That's a lot of people. Over 100 million Americans have pre or actual diabetes, and a whole lot more of good science. Then I'm going to take some of your calls, see what I can answer. I don't know how long that will last. And then a commentary from Chris Hedges from TruthDig, The Martyrdom of Julian Assange. And I'm also going to look at some important events. I'm not going to do another major commentary today. I did one yesterday on 5G. But what I am going to play today is I'm going to show you why this is so dangerous. We posted yesterday 67 pages of scientific references from peer review, top scientific journals, and research centers showing the dangers of 5G everywhere. Now today, I'm going to play you a 5-minute clip that is pro-5G, and you'll see how enticing it is to want to believe that this is really great and you should have it. Not once in that will you hear someone saying, but there are some health questions. So this all propaganda. And again, they control the media. They control how many ads they buy. And we just have my program. So that's why it's so important that you go to prn.fm, download yesterday's article, download yesterday's commentary, and then share it with as many people as possible. That is also what I would suggest you do with the articles that we have written on other important topics, whether it's GMOs or vaccines. It's just important, even environmental issues. So also today, if you're a person that was involved either at the Tri-State Healing Center, and especially if you had AIDS-defining illnesses, nurse, physicians, we had a large group of medical doctors, dietitians, I'd like for you to call in and share your points of view, because finally, we have decided to put energy behind challenging Wikipedia, Dr. Stephen Barrett, others who have made wrongful statements, libelous statements, slander statements. And for the last 12 years, I've chosen to put all my energy into producing as many positive, life-affirming and life-saving programs, books, articles, investigative reports, documentaries as possible. Now I'm turning around, and on behalf of hundreds of thousands of clinicians, hundreds of millions of patients who have been attacked, chiropractors, osteopaths, homeopaths, nutritionists, meditators, and I'm fighting back against Wikipedia. And guess what happened yesterday? Well, it seems like there was a large drop of information from WikiLeaks. And guess what one of those drops just happened to contain? Hundreds of files never before seen on Wikipedia as a cabal. So I'm asking our citizen journalists and researchers in this audience, go up and download all of those files. It'll take about 100 people to do this because there are tens of thousands of pages. Go through it and let's start putting together the case that we've been saying all along, that Wikipedia is a cabal. and it does not deserve its IRS nonprofit status, and the anonymous people deserve, if they've slandered or libeled someone, to be sued. And our team of lawyers are in preparation to do exactly that as we speak. So if you've had an experience and would like to share your experience, contrary to what they would have us believe on Wikipedia, our talkback number, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Now let's begin. First off, scientists at the University of Illinois have developed new hybrids of purple corn containing different combinations of phytochemicals that will help fight obesity, inflammation, and diabetes. And it's in the outer layer. That's where it gets purple. That's called the pericarp, P-E-R-I-C-A-R-P. And those brightly colored corn kernels can prove to be an extremely beneficial part of your diet. Now, in Mexico, they have those. In Guatemala and other countries in Central and South America, they have them. In the United States, we don't. You may have some heirlooms, but not on the general market. So it's important to get heirloom seeds, grow products, and then, like, let's say you're growing organic heirloom tomatoes, and there must be at least 100 varieties. Let's say you grow 5 plants. Dry them, and then take the seeds from them, and that becomes your seed storage for the following season. That's how you do it. And so if I started with 1 tomato plant this season, in about 90 days, depending upon the size and variety of the tomato, I'll get something ripe, and when it reaches its fullness of ripeness, so the enzymes are fully mature and photosynthesis has done its magic, then I would simply cut it into slices, put it in a food dehydrator overnight at 110, 15 degrees, and then in the morning I'd have all these wonderful seeds, hundreds per tomato. Then the next time I do this, I might grow 50 plants, from which I would end up with probably 25,000 seeds. And so it goes. And this is how, for the future, we should be saving heirloom seeds instead of having genetically modified seeds. In any case, this was published in the journal Food Chemistry, and it just shows that the more really bright colored foods like maize, M-A-I-Z-E, which is in the corn family, and the darker the color, the more phenolic compounds it has, the more powerful it is as an anti-inflammatory agent in our body. So that means it's going to help you with cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and various types of cancer. Just remember this, make it real simple. Every day have at least 13 servings minimum of the rainbow, different color fruits and vegetables. There is a substance, it's called Carvacrol, C-A-R-V-A-C-R-O-L. You'll know it because you've used oregano oil. This is from the University of Nuevo León in Mexico, published in the Journal of Essential Oil Research. And they found that this volatile compound derived from the essential oils of oregano is extremely powerful as an antimicrobial, meaning it goes after bacteria. And they tested these compounds against hospital-derived pathogens, including the multi-drug-resistant bacteria, which are commonly impacting people with weak immune systems. And by the way, they found the MRSA on curtains, you know, curtains they pull back up, at the bed to give you privacy. It was all over those damn curtains. Every single inch of a hospital room is contaminated. So anytime you go into a hospital, always make sure you take your wild oregano oil, peppermint oil, charcoal capsules with you, because you're going to have to do, and also some hydrogen peroxide, you're going to have to do some disinfecting. In fact, just assume everything is you touch is infected. But here, this wild oregano oil and this particular chemical in here was able to just destroy bacteria one after the other. So that's why it's so important to take with you. Now, you can take it on an airplane if you take it less than 3 ounces, and most of the bottles are 2 ounces, and always take it when you travel to another country. Now, something you don't see in the average American diet, but it should be, is lemongrass. Lemongrass, according to the University of Madras in India, protects you from oxidative stress and keeps heart disease at bay. I love lemongrass. I use it. I make infusions of it. In fact, when I'm working on my next, I've just finished a cookbook. It's a limited, very limited edition came out. I'm sorry, it was all sold out instantly. And that's why the station, our sister station, BAI, was not able to offer it except for one time. One day, one 20-minute segment, gone. Like 500 copies. But I'm working on my next cookbook. And at some point in the near future, we're hopeful to have another limited edition for the station and the audience. But if you ever saw my kitchen setup, and I'm filming it at the upcoming retreat, I'm doing this, I'm going to have like 50 infusions. Now, what's an infusion? Why is it important? Because most people do not understand how to season food. And as a result, they have very limited taste adjustments. Salt and pepper, sweet and sour, crunchy and soft. But food should be doing dances in your mouth. There's so many different flavors. So what I do is I'll take lemongrass and I'll juice the lemongrass, and then that becomes a concentrate. Then I dilute that concentrate, and then I put it into a little spray bottle. I might do the same thing with cinnamon, or lime, lemon, raspberries, red cherries. I might have savory ones, and dill, oregano, rosemary, thyme, basil. And so there's a whole selection. So let's say I want to make a salad, and I want it to be a crunchy salad. Well, a crunchy salad would be watercress, but you got to really wash watercress because it's very easy to be susceptible to parasites. So you rinse it, agitate it 3 times, meaning you spray your the watercress, then you fill a bowl and you rinse it, and then you agitate it with your hands. Dump it out, fill the bowl again, agitate, dump. 3 times, you'll get rid of everything. And then you put that into a bowl. I would put in some pomegranate seed with it, fresh pomegranate, and probably some pear, wedge pear. Then I would take the lemongrass and I would spray it over that salad. Now that's extremely exotic, but it's an interesting taste. And therefore, you're not just eating a salad, you're experiencing various flavors. And that's why, you know, you can use things you wouldn't otherwise use. But lemongrass is good for your heart. It's an anti-inflammatory. And you can also get lemongrass as an essential oil. And that protects your cells from harmful agents. And by the way, going into the warm season, if you're traveling somewhere where there are mosquitoes, always massage coconut oil into your skin. It is the best anti-flea and mosquito repellent that you can put on that doesn't harm your body. So one more thing that we can put into our body that makes a difference. It also is known when you drink it like lemongrass tea, you would make your lemongrass again, and you'd put that into some cold water, and then put maybe a couple leaves of fresh mint, spearmint or peppermint. And now you have a delicious, you know, tea, lemongrass tea. That lowers your cholesterol. That protects your heart. It's all good for you. Also, according to the University of Alabama, losing a loved one, as we all know, is one of the most stressful life experiences a person will ever endure. And its toll can be physical as well as emotional. In fact, science has shown, for example, that widows and widowers have a 41% higher risk of early death compared to their still married peers. And the relationship between grief and the immune system can explain bereavement's association with increased risk for disease and early death, at least in part. Since research began studying this, the first papers I was aware of are about 1977, and they've all shown that the more grief that you experience, the more of a negative impact it has on your immune system. And this was published in Psychosomatic Medicine. Now, it doesn't mean that we can prepare ourselves for grief. It's one of these crucibles of fire that we're all going to face in our life. We're all going to lose people in our lives, grandparents and parents, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters, pets, and that always will create grief. That is a normal process. And don't let someone tell you, well, it's more than 2 weeks, you shouldn't be grieving. That's nonsense. We all have to process grief in our own way. If we had help doing it, that would help us, certainly. But remember, when you're in grief, you're also hurting your immune system. So not to conflate the two issues, but rather, if you are in grief, if you're going through loss, make sure you do extra to build up your body's immune system. That's important. You've heard me mention many times on this show that inflammation is a part of almost every major disease, from Alzheimer's to arthritis, from heart disease to cancer. A new study out of Kanazawa University in Japan shows that inflammation causes gastric cancer. And it was way back in 1982 that researchers first reported that a chronic gastritis and a stomach bacterium, Helicobacter pylori, triggered a flurry of research into this newly identified pathogen, and that's also what can lead to stomach cancer. It's a pro-inflammatory bacteria, and I found the best way of dealing with it. This was work I did at the Institute of Applied Biology, is I had individuals, in fact, one of them was a city editor for the Journal of America in New York City, which was a famous newspaper for a long time in New York. And the guy's name was Guy Richards, and he had bleeding ulcers. And nothing medicine could do was making a difference. We'd be having a meeting, and he'd be doubled over. So I asked him, would he be willing to try something? He said, well, I've tried everything else. Nothing's worked. So I was giving him glasses of fresh-made organic cabbage juice, undiluted, three times a day. Within 3 days, everything changed. Within a week, he had no more pain. And 2 months later, it had all healed. So there are very strong anti-inflammatory ways of dealing with a pro-inflammatory H. pylori infection. And that infection can lead to a proliferation in the gastric epithelial stem cells that leads to gastric tumors. This was published, by the way, in the genetic journal Oncogene. So just remember, every single thing that you take into the body will either be pro-inflammatory or anti-inflammatory. And it does make a difference. According to Cambridge University, a study just out today, that from smoking to alcohol to air pollution to sunlight to malnutrition, all of these factors are known to cause cancer. However, now they're able to pinpoint the culprits for individual tumors. This is based upon the new fingerprints in DNA. So whatever caused your cancer initially, the changes in the DNA within the cells, these changes or mutagens can affect the way cells divide and grow the growth of the tissue, producing tumors. So now they're able to go back, and this was in the journal Cell, and determine exactly what the initial causes were. So that's interesting new science. And I mentioned yesterday about why smiling is so important. Well, now Texas A&M University came up with a new study that says, if you want to simply feel better for the day, try smiling. just smile. They looked at 11,000 participants in this one study, and just smiling makes all the difference in the world. Finally, from Mahidol University in Thailand, we hear about a berry. It's called the Mao berry, M-A-O-B-E-R-R. That's a Mao berry. And it produces a healthy heart. Well, since cardiovascular disease is leading to heart failure, and that's the leading cause of death around the world, now they're saying which foods can help turn off inflammation, turn off oxidative stress, and help protect the heart. And now they're saying eating the Mao berry can make a difference. So, that's been around a long time, and it's used to help people with high cholesterol levels over there. So just wanted to bring you something that exists now, that's natural, and hopefully after this program, there'll be some food distributors or people bringing it into the United States so we can get it dried and have some each day as a snack. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come back with your questions. Please stay with us.
Mel, thank you for the service. I have a health question for you. And I'd like to know, if we go to a holistic dentist and they're recommending before seeing them that we take an antibiotic or whatever dental reasons that are necessary, is there a natural antibiotic that we could take that, that you might have recommended in the past instead of taking a pharmaceutical antibiotic, which they are recommending?
Yes. First, a holistic dentist would explain prior to making a suggestion that you have an antibiotic that there are two types of antibiotic. There is the pharmaceutical antibiotic, and then there are natural antibiotics. If the point of the exercise is to kill bacteria, that maybe in the gum or maybe at the bottom of an infected tooth where otherwise there's root canal infestation of bacteria that would be difficult to eliminate, then they should know that the top five natural antibiotics, not just for visiting a dentist, but for any infection in the body, would be colloidal silver, generally at 500 parts per million. Colloidal gold is also good, same. Wild oregano oil, olive leaf extract, and bee propolis. Now, there's a lot of others, but those would be the ones that would be at the top of my list. Podiarco, echinacea, astragalus. Those both help the immune system, vitamin C, but they're not as powerful as the ones that I just gave you. Okay, we'll take another call.
Gary, hi. Thanks for all that you do. 65, it's Bill. One problem, belly fat. I mean, I follow a lot of your teachings. I work out. I walk 10 city blocks every day and do other weightlifting or whatever. I just can't get rid of the belly fat. Don't know what it is. I've tried green tea extract. I've tried CLA. I've tried capsicum. Hot chili pepper, nothing. Any suggestions, any ideas? Thanks a lot.
Okay. Keep in mind, walking 10 city blocks is not going to make a difference. First, because that's only a little less than a half a mile. It depends upon the block, but normally we call 20 city blocks a mile. It's more or less a mile. And when you're walking, you're going to be hitting at least in 10 city blocks, 3 and possibly 4 traffic lights, which means you stop. The key is, with an exercise, you have to maintain not just a constant stride, but you have to accelerate the stride. You have to break it up. You have to do fast and you have to do intensive, meaning maybe for one block, you go as fast as you possibly can, then you do a little recovery in the next block, then fast again, etc. And it's that intensity that really strengthens you. Otherwise, you can end up with what we call a junk exercise. It's like someone can get on a stationary bike and pedal for a half hour, but it's the intensity of that pedaling. If you go uphill in the low gear, so it's really the greatest resistance, that's where you benefit from the biking. Separately, the fat on the belly does not belong to the belly. Only the fat in the cells on the belly belong to that belly. So you could do a million sit-ups. You'll strengthen your abs, but you're not going to burn the fats on the belly. Aerobic is what burns that, and that would be aerobic power walking for at least 3 miles. That would be minimum, 3 to 5 miles, 5 days a week. Biking in intense gear from 10 to 20 miles a day, and then swimming. But again, butterfly swimming and freestyle fast, those are the most important things, but I do not recommend swimming in city pools for a simple reason. Chlorine, you're breathing it in. Very dangerous. Fecal matter in the body, you're taking it into your mouth. Just imagine that. Take a look at all the people in a public swimming pool. What do you think? Do you think all those people showered and cleaned themselves before they went into the water? No chance, not at all. So that means everyone's feces is all over that water, and you're in there, and it's going in your eyes, your ears, your mouth. That's disgusting. But also, that's very pathogenic. That could establish parasites in your body, local focal infections in the body. So I don't care what the reason is. I don't go into any public water. No way in the world. So just a suggestion, because I know some people, you know, they think it's a great idea to get into some public water. It isn't. That doesn't mean that you can't find other places to swim. You just have to be very conscious of what you're doing, because you've got a couple double negatives there. So when you start doing the exercising, reduce your caloric intake by 10%. So bring your calories down by 10% and increase your exercise level by 50%. Then within 2 months, your belly fat should be no longer there, gone. All right? That's all the time we have. We're going to, again, I'm asking for anyone who has been a part of our work who would like to call in, doctors, scientists, because I'm out of touch with most of those people because I had the Institute of, I was worked at the Institute of Applied Biology for 35 years, more or less, and it was nonstop for the first 30 years. And then the Tri-State Healing Center, I had that for almost 15 years. So we're seeing what people's experiences were. So we're going to deal with that, but I want to show you now. So give us a call, 888-874-4888. Now I want you to hear a pro 5G person, and this is what you're getting nonstop in the media. I mean, every other ad is for 5G, and yesterday's presentation, download it, and I'll give you the number. Here's the archive number to download yesterday's Noom program and listen in depth, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And also, read the article and share it with everyone you can. Because if I lived in a building, I would make copies of this and give it to the doorman or woman and to give to every tenant. Because if not, almost every building in New York City and suburbs is going to have a 5G tower on it or on the block. Because the wave is short. And therefore, it only goes a certain amount of feet, about 324 feet. That's why they're cutting down trees, beautiful trees, on all these city blocks, so that it doesn't interfere with the signal. But this you won't hear. Any criticism, this is the propaganda. So listen to the propaganda.
...of wireless networks delivers faster speeds and more functionality to our smartphones. 1G brought us the very first cell phones. 2G let us text for the first time. 3G brought us online, and 4G delivered the speeds that we enjoy today. But as more users come online, 4G networks have just about reached the limit of what they're capable of at a time when users want even more data for their smartphones and devices. Now we're headed toward 5G, the next generation of wireless. It will be able to handle 1,000 times more traffic than today's networks, and it'll be up to 10 times faster than 4G LTE. Just imagine downloading an HD movie in under a second, and then let your imagination run wild. 5G will be the foundation for virtual reality, autonomous driving, the Internet of Things, and stuff we can't even yet imagine. But what exactly is a 5G network? The truth is, experts can't tell us what 5G actually is, because they don't even know yet. But right now, there are five brand new technologies emerging as the foundation of 5G. Millimeter waves, small cells, massive MIMO, beamforming, and full duplex. First up, technology number one, millimeter waves. Your smartphone and other electronic devices in your home use very specific frequencies on the radio frequency spectrum, typically those under 6 gigahertz. But these frequencies are starting to get more crowded. Carriers can only squeeze so many bits of data on the same amount of radio frequency spectrum. As more devices come online, we're going to start to see slower service and more dropped connections. The solution is to open up some new real estate. So researchers are experimenting with broadcasting on shorter millimeter waves, those that fall between 30 and 300 gigahertz. This section of spectrum has never been used before for mobile devices, and opening it up means more bandwidth for everyone. But there is a catch. Millimeter waves can't travel well through buildings or other obstacles, and they tend to be absorbed by plants and rain. To get around this problem, we'll need technology number two, small cell networks. Today's wireless networks rely on large, high-powered cell towers to broadcast their signals over long distances. But remember, higher-frequency millimeter waves have a harder time traveling through obstacles, which means if you move behind one, you lose your signal. Small cell networks would solve that problem, using thousands of low-power mini base stations. These base stations would be much closer together than traditional towers, forming a sort of relay team to transmit signals around obstacles. This would be especially useful in cities. As a user moved behind an obstacle, his smartphone would automatically switch to a new base station in better range of his device, allowing him to keep his connection. Next up, technology number three, massive MIMO. MIMO stands for multiple input, multiple output. Today's 4G base stations have about a dozen ports for antennas that handle all cellular traffic. But massive MIMO base stations can support about 100 ports. This could increase the capacity of today's networks by a factor of 22 or more. Of course, massive MIMO comes with its own complications. Today's cellular antennas broadcast information in every direction at once, and all of those crossing signals could cause serious interference. Which brings us to technology number four, beamforming. Beamforming is like a traffic signaling system for cellular signals. Instead of broadcasting in every direction, it would allow a base station to send a focused stream of data to a specific user. This precision prevents interference, and it's way more efficient. That means stations could handle more incoming and outgoing data streams at once. Here's how it works. Say you're in a cluster of buildings and you're trying to make a phone call. Your signal is ricocheting off of surrounding buildings and crisscrossing with other signals from users in the area. A massive MIMO base station receives all of these signals and keeps track of the timing and the direction of their arrival. It then uses signal processing algorithms to triangulate exactly where each signal is coming from and plots the best transmission route back through the air to each phone. Sometimes it'll even bounce individual packets of data in different directions, off of buildings or other objects, to keep signals from interfering with each other. The result is a coherent data stream sent only to you. Which brings us to technology number five, full duplex.
Okay, understand what this person was just saying. They're saying that it's all positive, that everything's going to get faster. We agree, it will be faster. But you will be living every square inch of your world in a world where you're going to be bombarded by G5 We've shown you it can cause cancer, neurological problems with your brain. It'll put your body on, every cell in your body is going to be inflamed. And they're not telling you any of this. And they got Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton to pass the Communications Act, which gave them the telecommunications industry and the Federal Communications Commission the exclusive right to reject any science, any health claims that are negative, and to say, we want to put a tower here and you cannot protest it. And they codified that into law. So, that's it. Now, concerning, and by the way, those who would like to call and just leave a message, you can leave a message on our voicemail at 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. I'm going to play you a clip right now from George Galloway. He's at Oxford University. It's a debate, and this is post-debate when someone's asking him a question. This is 7 years ago about Julian Assange. Listen in. I think you'll find it of interest.
I want to bring in another voice here. It is Julian Assange's colleague, Glenn Greenwald. He's on the line. He's a longtime backer and proponent of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. Glenn, thanks for taking the time this morning.
Sure. I'm not sure why you introduced me as a colleague of Julian Assange, since I'm not actually that. I've reported on him as a journalist, but I'm happy to be with you.
Well, I would love if you could actually, just so people understand, characterize your relationship with him and with WikiLeaks.
Sure. I'm a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who has reported on WikiLeaks over the years, just like NPR has. And beyond that, I don't have any relationship with WikiLeaks or Julian Assange, and I'm not sure why you're trying to imply otherwise.
Have you been in contact with him today or leading up to this?
No.
And what do you think of the charges against him?
Well, I agree with the Obama Justice Department, the Washington Post editorial of 2011, the Guardian editorial from yesterday, and the consensus of press freedom groups around the world, which is that prosecuting Julian Assange in connection with publishing secret documents that showed U.S. war crimes is one of the gravest threats to press freedom possibly imaginable. And the indictment that the DOJ issued says, among other things, that Assange, for example, encouraged Manning to get more documents than she had originally provided, which is something journalists, I don't know if you know, work with sources or not in your reporting, but I do. This is something journalists do every day. They say, thanks for getting me this. Is there any way you can get more of that? So to criminalize that, encouraging sources to get more classified documents, is to criminalize journalism. And I would hope no journalist would stand behind the Trump administration as it tries to do that.
So you believe even if the charges that we just heard about from the U.S. government, even if they are true, that Julian Assange was involved in actually cracking into the U.S. government and helping Manning, that would not go beyond the definition of journalism?
Well, it depends what they were able to prove. The Obama Justice Department tried for years to find evidence that Assange did more than work with Manning in the capacity that journalists typically work with sources, and concluded there was no evidence to be able to do that. They impaneled the grand jury in 2010 and spent years looking and said there was no evidence for that. Obviously, if Julian Assange actually hacked into a government database, that's just standard criminal hacking. But the indictment doesn't say that. The indictment says that Julian worked with Chelsea Manning and encouraged her in order to get these documents, which, again, is something journalists do all the time. We'll have to see what the evidence says. Obviously, hacking is a crime, and just because you're a journalist doesn't mean you get to do that. But encouraging a source or working with a source to get documents is pure investigative journalism.
And if we set the larger debate about press freedom and how dangerous, as you say, this could be for press freedom and you know, a lot of disagreement out there over those issues, I just could we look at what happened specifically with Julian Assange in terms of the law? I mean, the British say he broke the law by skipping bail. You have Swedish prosecutors who say that their case is not necessarily closed on allegations of sexual assault. And you have the Ecuadorian government saying he no longer deserved asylum. So is there anything that is outside the bound of legal processes taking place today bringing him into custody?
Well, the Ecuador had provided Julian Assange with asylum because they were concerned that his arrest would be used as a pretext to ship him to the U.S. to be prosecuted in connection with the publication of documents, and said that that would be a persecution of him for his political liberties. And that's true as true today as it was 7 years ago. What changed is that the president of Ecuador for 6 years, who said to the U.S. and the U.K., we're not going to be bullied by you, was term limited out of office. The new president is much more submissive. The Trump administration has spent a year and a half trying to bully and coerce and pressure the Ecuadorian government to withdraw its asylum. So, yeah, I think threatening a foreign government to withdraw legally recognized asylum is a pretty severe violation of international law.
Do you have evidence of that? I mean, do you have actual reporting that the Trump administration has exerted that kind of pressure?
There's tons of reporting about that. If you go to Google and type Trump administration pressures Ecuador over Assange, you'll find every major media outlet in the world. I don't know how you missed it. Probably NPR has reported it, too, saying exactly that.
Okay, that was NPR. Well, the dumbest interviews I've ever heard. That was Glenn Greenwald. That was a clip that we just pulled up because it dealt with Julian Assange. This is the one with George Calloway, and I'm going to play a clip with George Calloway taking on the U.S. Senate on an upcoming program. But this is a short one where he is challenged. Now, keep in mind, the Swedish government did come and did spend hours interviewing Julian Assange about these allegations, but we reported at the time that we believed that these were agent provocateur setups. All the evidence showed that. Listen to what he has to say about it as well, and then you'll get an idea of why Julian Assange was being set up. Here's George Galloway, if it's the right clip.
Galloway, thank you for an extremely engaging speech. Closer to home, I'm sure I don't need to remind you about the resignation of Salma Yacoub, and also the withdrawal of...
Can I explain to the audience who Salma Yacoub is?
She's the chairman of Respect Party, who recently resigned her post, allegedly... an objection to Mr. Galloway's failure to apologise for his recently expressed views on rape. Kate Hudson also withdrew from...
Explain who she is, too.
Kate Hudson was going to be a Respect candidate in a by-election in Manchester in the coming months, and she withdrew her platform as well over the same issue. In light of those events and recent reports of harassment and intimidation of anti-rape campaigners and rape victims in Bradford by members of the Respect Party, I just wonder if you think the Respect Party is still a place for women.
Well, thank you for your close attention to the internal minutiae of the Respect Party, a party of 2,000 members. It was important that you explained to the people in the hall who the individuals that you're talking about were, because the vast majority of them will never have heard of them, but they will have heard, I'll grant you, about my stand over the Julian Assange WikiLeaks case. So let me address it. I believe that Julian Assange has been set up. I believe that the allegations against him, both the first allegations and those allegations that have subsequently morphed at the hands of persons unknown in Sweden, are entirely bogus. I have many reasons for believing that, and I do know rather a lot about the case. And I'm asking you to consider this. If Julian Assange is wanted in Sweden for questioning on sexual assault, as they were, later morphed into rape allegations, why doesn't the Swedish prosecutor come to London and interview Julian Assange in London? After all, just 3 or 4 months ago, the Swedish prosecutor did exactly that, to interview and question an alleged serial murderer. So there is no barrier at all to the Swedish prosecutorial authorities going to foreign jurisdictions to question people who will not agree to go to Sweden. Assange has asked for this from the very day, having been told that he might leave Sweden and was facing no charges, from the very day that Sweden announced that they did, in fact, want to question him, he has asked for Sweden to send its prosecutor to London and to question him here, as they have done with an alleged serial killer. Why have they not done so? Assange has asked, and now the Ecuador government has asked, for an assurance that if Assange returns to Sweden, that he will not be extradited from Sweden to the United States to face a secret indictment drawn up by a secret grand jury under the rubric, in papers released last week, released by the U.S. State Department itself, which declares Assange to be an enemy of the United States. Their words, not mine. And with capital letters, too. You thought enemy of the state was just a movie. In fact, Julian Assange is officially, capital letters, an enemy of the United States. So why will Sweden not give an assurance that a man not charged but wanted for questioning about allegations of sexual assault which morphed into allegations of rape, why will they not give such an assurance? You are intelligent people, able, I think, to smell the rat in that story. The rat is that Assange is wanted in the United States for telling the world the truth through WikiLeaks about gigantic crimes involving not just the rape, but the murder of millions of people, many, many of them women. That's why they want to get their hands on Julian Assange. And I'm proud to stand in defense of him. And trust me on this, sister.
Okay, and he finished off saying, trust me, the story that you don't know, that he did Galloway, because Galloway looked at all the evidence, and we also looked at the evidence, and we came to the same decisions, that this was a setup. Anyhow, more on Julian Assange, more on Barack Obama. He embarrassed Barack Obama. He embarrassed Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton believes that he cost her the election with the Podesta emails. So we're going to take this as far as we have to take it. We have an audio clip here. Let's go to it. Someone has left us a message.
Hi, my name is Elena Avram, and I work at the Institute of Applied Biology since 1970. I was born in Bucharest, Romania. I did my part of my medical training and school in Romania. I come in this country in 1970, and I start working immediately at the Institute of Applied Biology. And in there is where I met Garinol for the first time. She was start working there also to institute. And I personally assist in some of his discoveries that he did. And in his work, he was a very young and ambitious person and very love for discovery. He was involved with the Institute for many years and involved with all the group of scientists and always discussing and always a scientific curiosity that most of the people have today. And he worked for many years in that institute. He was in the third floor, I was in the second floor. And I was very, very insulted when I saw what an article, disgraceful article, was written against Gary after all this time that he helped and he was very, very attached with the patient without charging any penny from nobody, just working from the goodness of his heart just to see people being cured. He worked at the institute with cases that they were before he worked, before the AIDS came around. he worked with cases that they were related to high blood pressure, related to cancer research, related with vitamins. He was mostly interested in vitamins and all the research part that was taking part at the time, with high levels of vitamin C, with niacin, with many, many other products. And the AIDS, when the AIDS start, he was very much involved with this, and he was working close with the scientists from the Institute of Applied Biology, that they were doctors, they were PhD, they were all kind of researchers, that they were very much involved when the AIDS come. In fact, we had lot of patients with AIDS, and from what I know, Gary Noll was treating people with all kind of natural things and natural antivirals, like extractions and all kind of lipids and all kind of things. And I remember very vividly that he had 10 cases that they were really very impressive about AIDS. It was a nurse that was beaten by a patient with AIDS in one of the hospital. Was another gentleman that there's two or three, they're still alive, I think so today. Was a gentleman that also was in very bad shape, and there were lot of people coming and going through the doors of the institute, and Gary Noll was very deeply involved with all those studies and all this new research applied in AIDS, and apply working with the immune system, working with lot of new things. We were there, being that he was in the third floor, I was in the second floor, and the whole team of doctors and PhD, they were involved. We saw lot of patients, among of them that I can recall. I was there present, you know, with this 10 patients that we were always, sending them for blood control, for to see exactly what is happening. So he was involved in new approaches, bringing from natural way of treating patients, and having a lot of research with new vitamins, with new antiviral, natural antiviral. So I was there, and I was present in all these studies that was done. And we worked there for many years together. So during this time of research, application, and treatments, we saw patients that they were from, they were seroconverter, for the AIDS, that they were no more involved with this stupid virus that the people were suffering so much. They were converted from positive to negative. And I saw personally those type of patients.
Hold on one second. Let's just emphasize that for a moment. This is a 50-year scientist, 50 years at the Institute, and one of the most respected scientists at the Institute. She was the communications coordinator on cancer and on AIDS. And I was presented, just so you better understand this, I was presented with 10 cases of advanced AIDS. These people were near death. And they had not been able to succeed downstairs. That's where all the main scientists were. And so they asked, would I take a look at this? She did, and I did, and I worked with them, and I had a natural approach using natural antivirals and immune enhancement. And over a period of about 2 years, all 10 of those seroconverted, meaning they not only no longer had any of the 30 recognized conditions called AIDS, those were all reversed. But they also seroconverted from HIV positive negative on all their blood workups. No more viral load. These were completely normal, healthy persons at the end of 2 years. But this wasn't all at once. This was over a period of about 5 years. And she had the blood chemistry's work done almost every other week, and then they would report. And she would then take the monthly reports to the monthly meeting of all the scientists and the different department heads, and they were all perplexed by it. And at different times, they would come around. Now, there were scientists from Italy, scientists from Africa. In fact, the health ministers from two countries in Africa heard about the work that was being done with AIDS and approached and asked, would I set up a holistic program for treating AIDS in Africa? One was Uganda. And I think, the other was the Sudan. So there was a lot going on. But there is one example. So you, the audience, just heard what she said. Seroconvert 10 people. No one else in history has done one. That was just at the Institute. Now, that is completely separate from the work I was doing at the Tri-State Healing Center, where 8 out of 8 people who were on a much more comprehensive protocol than the 1,200 others seroconverted. So we had press conferences. We were open. People from all over the world would come and see the work that was being done. There was nothing hidden. It was all out. It was all free. I donated my time. So that's why she was offended. She read the Wikipedia piece about this. So instead of having the American media pay a little positive attention to good results and interview the patients, which they were asked to do, to look at their medical records, which they were asked to do, the patients gave permission. Instead of coming, they didn't. Why? Simple. At the same time, I was writing articles showing the dangers of the drugs they were using, like AZT and DDI and protease inhibitors, and how those were creating the very symptoms we called AIDS. So no one ever knew, was a person dying of full-blown AIDS, which they did, or were they dying of the conditions, the side effects of the drugs, which they also did. And nobody wanted to take the credit for killing 300,000 Americans by using AZT. Hence, if I was curing people of AIDS, which I was, no one else in the world has, then that's not a good recommendation. So kill the messenger, destroy the reputation. So finally, people are coming forward, medical doctors, scientists, clinicians who were there firsthand. And now we have the documentation you can see for yourself. Tony Brown, Bill Tatum, Bill McCreary, Earl Caldwell, all outstanding award-winning journalists came, spent time, did their homework, interviewed, got the blood work up, and proved positive this was happening. Not a word of their work ever appeared in any of the mainstream media. Well, I'm glad that came out. We'll hear from more people, I'm sure, in upcoming days. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.